Well, yeah, so we'll look at the shroud today. It is such a popular topic. It kind of gets quoted and called the most studied relic in the world, is kind of a phrase that gets thrown around there. But it's such a popular topic that it has its own word for the study. Syndonology is how you might say that. And you'll kind of even see that sometimes written out in other ways, depending on the language too. But in English, it would be syndonology. What we know for certain, absolutely, there's no question about this statement that I'm going to make. The shroud is a cloth held in a Catholic chapel in Turin, Italy, purported to be the burial cloth of Jesus. No one can deny that. That is true. It is a cloth that's held in the name of the chapel is written there, Cappella della Sacra Sindone. If I can't speak Italian one lick, but if I try my best, that's probably how I would say it. I think I've got it.
I'm Italian and
I don't speak. There you go. There's a picture of it. There's a picture of it on display today.
You said that you showed this to us.
Yeah, we looked at a couple. Yeah. We looked at some pictures. But yeah, this is a picture of the display that it's on today. And it'll also go on tour occasionally too. They'll take it. I believe it was at the History Museum of the Bible in the States not too long ago. For several months while I was on tour. So they will tour, but typically it's held there in Turin, there in the chapel. We have tons of, it's not like the only burial garment we have. Like, we have lots and lots of ancient burial garments. It's the only one of one, that has the image of a man on it. The rest of them, if they have something on it, it's splotches of blood or decomposition material. It's none of them. Outside of this one, have the image of a man on it. The church, the Catholic Church, does consider it a relic. Like, they call it a relic, but they don't actually, interestingly enough, they don't have a formal position. The Pope has not formally declared it to be true or formally declared it to be false. The church has just, since it came into church's hands, as we'll kind of look at the history here in a minute, they've just kind of always considered it a relic, and they've kind of left it at that, which I just kind of find interesting. The image itself, absolutely, we're certain that no paint, dye, or powder make up the image. Those things are, like, there's little speckles of it on the thing. Like, that's not being denied. But the image of the man itself is not made up by paint, dye, or powder. No, especially artistic material of the time that critics would say that it was made. There's none of that that makes up the image. We'll kind of get to the current proposition of how the image got there. The only way that someone has been able to make a copy of the image that matches the same kind of chemistry test. Same kind of physics test. It doesn't match, obviously, the chemistry test of the dating. They used a more modern piece of fabric. Not a first century piece of fabric, but they did successfully kind of recreate this with UV radiation. We'll look at that later. But no paint, dye, or powder make up the image, that's for sure. The image is superficial, so it's only on the very first layer of microfiber. There's about 200 layers of microfiber. So to say, like, what we can also see is the bloodstains. Bloodstains run deep almost the entire way through the fiber. This is superficial, the very top layer. Good morning. So, yeah, for that to be the case, it really can't be a chemical reaction of any kind. It has to be, again, some kind of really light impression, radiation impression, something that's not a chemical reaction or a painting or anything like that. And we know that the fabric is a 3-to-1 herringbone pattern linen weave. That doesn't mean anything to me, but if you know fabrics, that might mean something to you. But we know that that's the type of fabric. We know it's the original material is 100% linen. It's not a multi-fabric.
What was the type of fabric?
It is a 3-to-1 herringbone pattern linen weave. And it is like 100% linen. It is not a mixed material.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, so it's a linen. And it's consistent with what someone who was wealthy in that era of time would have. And what we read in all four of the Gospels accounts for Joseph of Arimathea taking Jesus off the cross and being the one who helps bury him. And Joseph is recorded as part of the Jewish council, wealthy man. This was a new tomb, a fresh garment. That's recorded in all four Gospels. John also records in his gospel at the resurrection about the garments that are folded up and laid out in the tomb. And we'll come to it, but he actually mentions multiple, not just one, and that they're separate. So there are accounts in all four gospels of Jesus being buried in the tomb by Joseph with a clean, and in some of them they'll say like a new or a rich cloth, linen cloth in most of them as well. So all four mention him being buried like that. And then John also talks about his resurrection and the cloths that were there. That's about all that we really have in Scripture. Some people will, I want us to try to stick for time, especially to try to stick to some of the more concrete things. But some people will make arguments, like, for example, in Galatians 3:1, Paul is saying that they saw they with their own eyes saw the image of the crucified Christ, is what Paul says in Galatians 3:1. People will suggest that that could mean that they saw literally an image of the crucified Christ. It's not like they had a picture of it, right? They didn't have a video of it. So what could they have had? Potentially this cloth. Could it also just mean that could Paul just be talking about like painting the image with his words and that they understand for sure? That's why I don't want to run into, there's four cases like that in Galatians 3:1 where some people will try to stretch that there is evidence to say that the shroud is in Scripture. But again, I don't think that those are super concrete, and so I don't want to get stuck on them for now. This is all just stuff that we talked about. There's traces of blood and paint, metals and stuff that are on there, but we know that's not what makes up the image. It's just stuff that has gotten on there over the years. Because even if we want to go with the like strictest critics, then we're still saying this thing's like 700 years old and has been passed around hands and... it's an old thing. It's going to collect dust and a lot of other stuff on it. And they have added patches in places. They've done repair work. Like I said, this is a pretty modern picture where you can see that there's sections missing. You can see where it was, like all of this is from one fire section that where it was folded up, and you can see that it's identical the whole way around. You can see edges where they're frayed. So the thing is just old. It's either thousands of years old or at least 700 years old. And again, passed hands a lot, gets moved around a lot. It's not like 14th century artifact keeping was at the same quality level of restoration that we have today. So let's look at some of these images. Most of them come from shroud.com. Super easy to remember. This picture, if you go to shroud.com and then you click on the photo gallery, you'll be able to click on like each section of it and it'll zoom into it. So I think this is in total a 16-part picture. You can zoom in more closely on the naked eye photo, but this is the naked eye photo. So really no alteration has been done to it. Just a high resolution naked eye photo of the entire piece of fabric. So you can kind of see how I was going to do a bad illustration with an action figure, but I couldn't find one in there. You can see how though, like the man was kind of laying down and then it was folded over top of him. Kind of sandwiching over on top of him with a crease at the back and it open on the, or a crease at the head and it being open on the toes and on the sides there. This is the photo in the negative. So if you took the photo of the naked eye and then made it a negative, the first one of these, and as we kind of get to the history, you'll see it written, but this is the first one of those negative photos taken in 1898, was the first time that we took a negative photo. And you can really see a lot of detail as we get into this now. I mean, even in the naked eye photo, you can still see detail. And this is likely faded over time, but here you can see it very cleanly. If it'll let me. No, it doesn't want to let me. But again, you can kind of zoom in on these pictures on shroud.com and you'll be able to see in more detail. I mean, you can see the back wounds pretty clearly. You can see the side and the wrist and the feet wounds are a little harder to see in this negative photo from... There's more recent 1898 photo that this is. I just wanted to show you the original. But they've got better negative photos now where you can see the foot wound clearly.
How tall is the man in this?
About 5'10 is what medical experts can estimate. The entire cloth itself is 4.4 meters, I believe. But it's somewhere in the 4-meter range. Don't quote me on the 0.4 part. But the man itself, medical experts estimate him to be about 5'10". Here's just a side-by-side again. As it blows up on here, the resolution's lost a little bit, but you can see pretty clearly in there the details of the man, but then really clearly here the details of the man. This is a picture of the fabric itself where the blood stains are. So you can see how the blood stains go in past that first layer of microfibers. They really get in there. And also you can see just kind of, again, resolution's lost a little bit on the projector, but you can see it is, like you were saying, it's not a cheesecloth. It's a good linen weave. It's tight. This is a, what was this one? This was the, not the ultraviolet, but the infrared. And so what you're seeing is mostly blood. Or no, it's gotta be the other way around. This is the ultraviolet. What you're seeing is mostly blood here. And so you can track, like, it's pooling in the high areas, it's sticking in his hair. You can really get a sense of the head wounds, where they're able to kind of identify wounds up here. Again, eyebrows, hair collecting, blood on the high ridges of the faces, and blood running down. This is the infrared one, sorry, I flip-flopped those. Again, you can see some detail in the man, where blood would have been pooling and running. This one is from 1978. We'll talk more about this in a second, but this is called a VP8 test. What's interesting about these VP8 tests, and they've gotten better over the years, so like this was 1978, this was in the 90s, and this is a more modern one. I think this was in the 2010s. But what's interesting about these is it's essentially sonar. So if you do this on like a painted photograph, it just looks like a blur. There's no depth, nothing created the depth. You can't essentially create the relief of something that was there. They don't really use it on photographs. They just did it on this because of the possibility of what it is, rather than it being an artistic fake. So if it was an artistic fake, it wouldn't actually show this relief, like you would see essentially how it was laying over the man. And yet when we do these VP8 tests, it does show that. There has even been in this, we'll talk as we get to the history here, we'll talk about the recent tests. With the recent test, they did a full AI recreation of the body. I didn't want to show that. I'm a little uncomfortable showing it because it obviously is a naked man, fully. But if you'd like to go see that for yourself, all you would have to do is AI shroud image, and you'd see the, it looks like a bunch of medical professionals over a table, and it more or less looks like a dead man laying there in rigor mortem. And it's, so I just didn't want to show it, but know that that exists too. If you want to see that, it would be the most recent technologically created image. But this is from within the last decade here, and you can see in pretty clear detail kind of even the depth of the man in this photo. So there are more photos. If you want to go to shroud.com, you can see more of these testing photos, more photos of the shroud itself, photos that they've done over the years with the testing. But let's kind of talk about the history of the shroud. So if this thing is real and not fake, but it actually is the burial cloth of Jesus, then there probably should be sources before the 14th century. The 14th century is where our unbroken tradition starts. So once it pops up in Lyrie, France, in the 14th century, we've got it continuously from there. We know where it's at. We know what's happening to it. We know that that is the same thing. There are a whole lot of early traditions around a image of Jesus made not by the hands of man. And you can trace these, and it kind of feels like running ghosts, but the ones that are most solid and are also coming from, like, some of the sources are going to quote from Gnostic Gospels. I'm just throwing the whole thing out, so I don't care if they also reference some kind of, you know, burial cloth of Jesus. I'm just throwing the whole thing out. So these are coming from reasonable, reliable historical sources and are referencing this image or this shroud or this cloth, or it kind of, as time comes in closer to the 14th century, it gets closer and closer to being called the exact same thing. So in the third century, so that's, the 200s, that's where we start having like church fathers and early traditional writings around Peter having gotten the cloth from Jesus and storing it safely. It's not necessarily talking about the cloth having the image on there. These are just saying that, yeah, that cloth has been kept by the church and the church at large, and they've got it. Remember that up until, and we'll talk about this too with the art, but remember up until the start of the 4th century, so like the first decade of the 300s, when Constantine takes the Roman Empire throne, up until that point, Christians can't really make churches and put things on display, and everything's on the run, in secret. We're trying not to get thrown into gladiator pits right now. We're not so worried about creating beautiful churches to display all of our artifacts that we have. So it's reasonable to assume that if they have this thing, they're not exactly flaunting it. But that's where earliest, outside of if you want to go back and say something like Galatians 3 is the earliest source, this would kind of be where you start having it pop up again of talking about this this burial cloth in the 2nd century. You've got another guy, a bishop from Gaul. His name's Arculf, there we go. A bishop from Gaul, so France. He refers to seeing the cloth of Christ. He calls it just the burial cloth of Christ in the 7th century in Edessa. Also in the Holy Land, assuming Edessa, he didn't specify where. But Charlemagne writes of seeing the burial cloth while he's there in the 800s, so the 9th century. Probably not a full 200-year gap, probably more like 150 between the two. But there is a, it's more Eastern church tradition, but there is something called the image of Edessa. It's one of these long-standing traditions of in the city of Edessa, there was this image of Jesus that was not made by hands. You'll see it also called, we'll look at actually some of them too when we get to the art section, but there's been a lot of different images that have come from this, but this image of Edessa gets, from people who want to talk about the shroud being its tradition really running the whole time, and just picking up the name starting in 1204 with Robert de Clary there, then you could just say that, well, they were just calling it other things. And up until that point, it was called the image of Edessa. Because interestingly, around the time that the image of Edessa as a singular thing, and rather being just referred to as the image from which these other images came, it pretty much disappears right around the same time. So it does kind of make sense to link these together, at least in a reasonable way. So from Edessa, Edessa loses it in 944. This guy John Caracas is a pretty famous leader of the in his crusade. And so when he takes the city of Edessa, he takes back the image to Constantinople. Well, in 1204, this French soldier in the 4th crusade, while he was in Constantinople, he reports to seeing the shroud. You've got that quote from him there in your notes. It says, among other astonishing things, there is a church called St. Mary of Blancherny, probably not saying that right, but whatever, where there is the shroud. So this is the first time that a burial cloth gets called the shroud, in which our Lord Jesus was wrapped, and that on every Holy Friday is lifted up vertically so that the shape of our Lord could be seen very well. So Robert's the first guy to call this thing the shroud and to suggest that the whole shape and image of the Lord could be seen on it. And he says that on Good Friday, they parade this thing through the streets of Constantinople, that it's part of their tradition, which, again, the image of Edessa getting paraded through the streets was part of the image of Edessa's tradition. So it seems like that just carried over, if in fact it is the same thing. After Robert, it gets unbroken, or it gets broken until it gets found there about 100 years later in France. But we can, again, kind of trace some people who are mentioning seeing the cloth of Christ. It gets seen in Athens for a couple years. Then it's back in Byzantium. Then it pops up in France until the early 14th century, whenever we get it solidly linked. And we don't have it broken since then. Let's see. This is going to be two parts. Look at that. Okay. So for modern history, calling modern like when we found it and we know what it is. In the medieval time, there was some damages. So the first fire that it gets in is in 1532. The most recent actually wasn't medieval. It was in 1997, and the thing was nearly toast. It's had molten silver dropped on it. It's had other spills of other things on it. It's been transported around, past hands. it's taken plenty of damage. We kind of saw some of that in those photos. It gets taken to Turin in 1578 after a second fire, and also the church just wanting it. Then we saw that black, that first kind of negative in 1898. In that gap between there, obviously I didn't put anything between 1578 and 1898. That's a big gap. There's just not a lot happening. It's on display. It's a relic. There's some of these medieval damages are happening in the times, but there's just not a lot to report. And then kind of the next thing to report is when that first negative photo gets done by a guy named Secondo Pia, an Italian in 1898. And that really is where the more scientific interest in this thing takes off. The first like big testing done that was allowed on it was in 1978. A group of about 30, mostly Americans, came over to Italy. They did mostly UV testing on it. And really what they were trying to determine was, is this thing a painting or not? To which they determined no. But they really didn't do any destructive testing in 78. 88 is when the C14, the carbon dating testing, happens. That pegs it into the right at the end of the 13th, beginning of the 14th century. So right about the time that it pops up in our solid history. But as we'll get to, I guess, in 2 weeks, the dating on that, a lot of reasons, more than one reason to feel like that's faulty. But that's when the carbon dating happens and is there in the late 80s. And then in 02, there's some more testing and other types of stuff that's done, more images and scans that happen, but nothing like destructive or serious until 02. In 02, it needs some restoration work done, and people feel a certain kind of way about that, but the work does ultimately happen. You can read all the reports on restoration if you're interested in that. Again, more scans and certain types of stuff, but it's not until the last 4 years when there's been some blood and then some wide-angle x-ray scanning, is what WAX stands for. That's been happening recently, and that's the newest developments, is the Italian team doing this blood testing, and then again some Italians and some Americans that are doing this x-ray scanning. So the last thing that we'll talk about today then is, well, no, nah, maybe a little bit longer. So this thing, the Sudarium of Oviedo, this has got an even longer traceable history. We know this thing goes back to the 500s. And it is small. It's about 3 feet by 2 feet. Not even quite that on each way, 33 by 21 on the inches. This is thought to be the facial death cloth of Christ. So again, in John, it records multiple things and that they're separate. So in other words, what would happen with this much smaller cloth is that as they're bringing Jesus down, they cover his face. So his face isn't in the dirt when they're taking him off the cross. And then they keep it on there as they're taking him to the tomb. And if you think about it, it's essentially what happens is it's essentially laid across his face, and then the excess is folded backwards over his face, if that makes sense. And so this is, if this is what it is, whoever's cloth this is, that's what happened. With this, again, there's no image in here. If you're trying to Rorschach test, you're not going to find anything. It's just blood stains, and it's also interesting because it's, as you can see, there's some stuff about this that's quite interesting as far as saying that this is what's purported to be. For one, the blood that's on it would be the blood coming from his face, and it's very consistent with what medical doctors would see from someone who died of the wounds that he died from, where the blood would be mixed with liquid from the lungs from the asphyxiation of crucifixion. There is also essentially, don't know how to call it, but blood-sweat mixture. So just places where you can see, obviously, this is not blood, and obviously this is blood, and it's in the same kind of blotch. That could happen on a cloth like this. That could just happen from there being sweat and blood that ran together. But also, we understand what Scripture says about Jesus. We'll talk more about points of comparison here in a bit with art. I moved where this was originally in the slide. So at this point, originally, you already knew points of comparison. But if you If you look at this thing, as far as where the blood's pooling and where the wounds are, forensic scientists have found 70 points of comparison with the front side of the shroud and 40 points of comparison with the back side of the shroud. For reference for you, modern forensics considers an image identical. Like if you go rob the gas station and they have the video and they watch the video, if they can take a picture of you and that video and forensics can find 40 points of comparison, modern policing forensics calls that an identical image. That is you. Can't question it. So we have 70 points of comparison on the front and 40 on the back. Do with that what you will. So looking at art and kind of points of comparison, there are some aspects of the early pictures of Jesus, and really now all pictures of Jesus, because our modern images have really gotten mostly shaped off of those past ones. I guess today you'll see more where they like are just trying to take the representation of a Jewish man from that time, and so maybe they lack some of the more distinct shroud features. But things that are very distinct to the shroud and really start to pop up around the time that those early, we can't call them the shroud, but those early cloth, those early image not made by man's hand images start popping up. So the clefted but off-center beard, in most photos you'll see that Jesus has a clefted beard, and it's usually not like stylized, it's more like a notch that was taken out. You'll see a triangle marking about right here between the eyes. You'll typically see some creases in the exact same spot and measure on the throat. His hair is typically a perfect middle part. The left ear hair is typically tucked back, and the right ear hair is typically forward. You typically see some lines in the eyebrows, and the eye shape is pretty much always exact. This is the very, very first image of Jesus that we have. And it's a graffiti of someone slandering Christians, essentially. But it's a carving here. This is it traced out better so you can see it. But it's essentially a donkey-headed man on a cross. And it says, Alexamenios worships his God. And so this comes from potentially as early as the first century, but probably the second century. That's the earliest thing that we have that's an image of Jesus. If you look up like Alexamenios graffiti, that you'll find this image. This is probably the first positive image of Jesus. This comes from the third century. I'll see if I can zoom in here. This is supposed to be of Peter and Jesus. But Jesus is here. This comes from Rome, actually. And so he is depicted as more of a, well, one, it's just not very good art. But two, he's depicted more like a Roman man. He has short Roman hair. He has no beard. He's wearing a Roman toga. So he's Romanized, really. It's not until we start getting into the fourth century where, again, like we talked about, Christianity is no longer under persecution and you can start painting his image and making churches. And Constantine starts printing coins, as do other Roman emperors, that all of a sudden you start seeing a more Jewish Jesus come out into images. And so that starts pretty much immediately right around the end of the persecution era. This is a coin from the 5th century. So the coin's on the left. On the bottom is the shroud image, and on the right they're overlaid. Again, we have about 150 points of comparison on these two. Forensics would call them an identical image. This is one of the earliest, like, let's say good pieces of art. This is from the 4th century in a Byzantine fresco. And you can even here start picking up on the clefted beard, the tucked hair, middle part. The triangle is hard to see on here, but if you go in close, he's got the triangle. And so you start to see a lot of the images, even in the very first ones, start to pop up. This is the most famous. We said, they had this image that was considered the image of Jesus made not by human hands. And then now there's a lot of images that have come from that, and they're kind of considered this icon of Jesus. So this is the most famous one. It's one of the oldest. This is actually not a painting. It's a wax. I don't know what you would call that, but it's made out of wax. It's in Sinai, I believe, like the Sinai Peninsula, at a church there. But this is from the 6th century, and again, you can see all these things, lines in the eyebrow, middle part, tucked hair. This one, the clefted beard's not so there, but again, the beard's off-center. You have the middle kind of thing here. Just so you get a lot of these icon features. Here's a 12th century one with the image of the shroud on the side, so we can like really kind of see the comparison. As we get closer and closer, to modern, and then even more so. I also do want to point out all of these were before, like this one especially, is before the shroud. So if the shroud's only 700 years old, this is 900 years old, this image. So again, I mean, the negative is almost a one-to-one of this guy. So it really seems like, even if it's not the shroud itself, even if there was some other separate image, I cannot say the life of me, but there is this, it's like woven, and it's just the face. And it also looks incredibly similar to, I'll find the name here in a second before we finish for today. But it looks incredibly similar to the shroud image as well. So perhaps somebody makes this same thing from the image. But kind of the point here is, if this is actually the real face, there could be more than one source. It's the real face, so all things are coming from the real source. Again, I mean, this is art made in the 13th century, late 12th century, but it is just art, but boy, the comparisons sure seem to be stacking up. And we'll hold here till next week, or the next time, because we won't have it next week with me being gone. But we'll look at like what medical professionals have to say and what's been happening with the lab testing, in really starting with that 78 UV testing and then going on to the blood testing that's happening right now. We will look at some of just the most popular criticisms, like what I think are kind of the strongest rebuttals that you could make. Because again, I mean, I wouldn't say by any stretch that I am certain about this. I think there are fair rebuttals to some of this. But that's what we'll do next time. We'll look at the medical professionals. We'll look at the testing. We'll look at some of the criticisms and then just kind of draw some final conclusions. But I thought I might go faster. I did not. Whoops. Yeah. So, thanks for being here this morning, and we'll pray and...